According to the scriptures, I shall now in brief describe the practice of the Bodhisattva discipline. Here I shall say nothing that has not been said before, and in the art of prosody I have no skill. I therefore have no thought that this might be of benefit to others. I wrote it only to habituate my mind. My faith will thus be strengthened for a little while, that I might grow accustomed to this virtuous way. But others who now chance upon my words may profit also, equal to myself in fortune. So hard to find the ease and wealth whereby the aims of beings may be gained. If I now fail to turn it to my profit, how could such a chance be mine again? Just as on a dark night, black with clouds, the sudden lightning glares and all is clearly shown. Likewise, rarely, through the Buddha's power, virtuous thoughts rise brief and transient in the world. Virtue thus is weak, and always evil is of great and overwhelming strength. Except for perfect bodhicitta, what other virtue is there that can lay it low? For many eons deeply pondering, the mighty sages saw its benefits, whereby unnumbered multitudes are brought with ease to supreme joy. Those who wish to crush the many sorrows of existence, who wish to quell the pain of living beings, who wish to have experience of a myriad joys, should never turn away from bodhicitta. Should bodhicitta come to birth in those who suffer chained in prisons of samsara, in that instant they are called the children of the Blissful One, revered by all the world, by gods and humankind. For like the supreme substance of the alchemists, it takes our impure flesh and makes of it the body of a Buddha, jewel beyond all price. Such is bodhicitta, let us grasp it firmly. Since the boundless wisdom of the only guide of beings perfectly examined and perceived its priceless worth, those who wish to leave this state of wandering should hold well to this precious bodhicitta. All other virtues, like the plantain tree, produce their fruit, but then their force is spent. Alone the marvellous tree of bodhicitta constantly bears fruit and grows unceasingly. As though they pass through perils guarded by a hero, even those weighed down with dreadful wickedness will instantly be freed through having bodhicitta. Why do those who fear their sins not have recourse to it? Just as by the fire that will destroy the world, great sins are surely and at once consumed by it. Its benefits are thus unbounded, as the wise and loving Lord explained to Sudana. Bodhicitta, the awakened mind, is known in brief to have two aspects. First, aspiring, bodhicitta in intention. Then active bodhicitta, practical engagement. As corresponding to the wish to go and then to setting out, the wise should understand respectively the difference that divides these two. From bodhicitta in intention, great results arise for those still turning in the wheel of life. Yet merit does not rise from it in ceaseless streams, as is the case with active bodhicitta. For when, with irreversible intent, the mind embraces bodhicitta, willing to set free the endless multitudes of beings, in that instant, from that moment on, a great and unremitting stream, a strength of wholesome merit even during sleep and inattention, rises equal to the vastness of the sky. This the Tathagata in the Sutra Subahu requested, said with reasoned argument to those inclined to lesser paths. If with kindly generosity one merely has the wish to soothe the aching heads of other beings, such merit knows no bounds. No need to speak then of the wish to drive away the endless pain of each and every living being, bringing them unbounded excellence. Could our father or our mother ever have so generous a wish? Do the very gods, the rishis, even Brahma, harbour such benevolence as this? For in the past they never, even in their dreams, wished something like this even for themselves. How could they do so for another's sake? This aim to work for the benefit of beings, a benefit that others wish not even for themselves, this noble, jewel-like state of mind, arises truly wondrous, never seen before.